Well, good morning, everybody. I've been asked along, really, to talk about our changing world and the qualities and skills needed to thrive in it. I may well be frightening you at some point today, but I think we all start to really need to get that sense of anticipation and possibly even apprehension about the future. So I'd like to start out by setting out the new context for business. There is no doubt that global dynamics have shifted the ground beneath our feet. We have a global economic landscape that nobody could have imagined, probably even in their worst nightmares. But technology is having a profound impact on how and where we operate. So what we are beginning to see is the thing that has been talked about for a long time become a reality, the global workforce. Now, you've probably heard some of these facts before, but China will very shortly, possibly by the end of this year or next year, become the number one English-speaking country in the world. If you took all of the jobs in North America and moved them to China, they would still have a massive labour surplus. In fact, it would only just extend beyond the top 25% of their people with the greatest IQs. So this is just one of the emerging countries, I would say merged countries, who have a phenomenal capability, and that's who our education system is competing with. Now, we've already had, there was a survey, can't remember whether it was the end of last week or even yesterday, but it was fairly, very recent in fact, where employers are already saying that they prefer graduates from China and India, the Latin American countries, not because of their educational prowess, but because of the characteristics that they have, their hunger to get on, their creativity and innovation, their energy. Characteristics that we don't always see in UK graduates, for example. So the rising skills and aspirations of those major countries are driving this new global economy. And that means in the UK we're going to have to continually drive up the value chain. Even with the current economic situation, we're forecasting that by 2020 there will be 3 million less lower skilled jobs in the UK economy. Now that means not only does that have profound implications for the people coming through the education system, but basically as employers it means we're going to have to retrain about 7 million people. So if we don't create populations who are self-learning, who want to learn, we are going to be in real problem because we're moving into very fast-paced change, both within business and within society generally. Now, we all know that many of our older industries are gone. The ones who thrive, though, are adapting fast. They're building skills and they're delivering higher value products and services. So what they're doing more than anything, though, interestingly, is delivering those into the growth markets, and the growth markets are in the new economies. So we are beginning to export again, which is a very interesting phenomenon even at the moment. So we know that the jobs of the future are going to be talent-based. They'll be in knowledge-intensive industries. Competition will be fierce, we know that. I don't believe, however, that we'll see the so-called knowledge economy, because at the same time what we're seeing is knowledge become free and ubiquitous. You cannot build an economy on something that's all around you and completely free. So I think the whole concept of the knowledge economy is actually a bit of a fake. So that's at least one thing we can cross off our worry list. And, you know, what impact is that having? Well, we're seeing countries like China. They're experts in creating high technology. Their exports went from about $10 billion to over $200 billion worth in just 10 years. Pretty much the same picture in India as well. These are countries who know how to accelerate through change. So But we also face more intrinsic challenges, such as climate change, social inclusion, and the need for market invention, which also means that we must do business differently to succeed. I also believe that we have a real opportunity to think about what that means for reshaping our societies. Yochai Benkler said, how we make information, how we get it, how we speak to others and how others speak to us are core components of the shape of freedom in any society. We have to think about how we give people the skills to make sure that that is actually a reality, because otherwise we potentially face a very volatile situation. So if I come back to me and my business, BT, there's no doubt that we're going to need innovative products and service and solution designers that can keep us ahead of our competitors. We've got to provide communication services that everyone can use and that are also environmentally sustainable. But more than that, we need customers who can also co-develop and co-own our products and services. So what I need to ask is, can teachers teach the habit of learning and sharing development? Because actually employers are no longer just worried about the education levels of their employees. We're absolutely terrified about the educational ability, the ability to think and develop and learn amongst our customer base. For most of us, with a double dip potentially on its way, the thing that we have to do is continue to reduce the cost of our operation. In order to do that, more and more of us are going to put more and more online, go more and more self-service. If we don't have a global community, a global population that can help us co-build, that can work with the products, we probably won't even sell products in the future. We'll sell capability, and people will invent their own products and services. And if you have any doubt about that, I've got some terrifying statistics here for you. 48% of children 6 and under are using PCs. 31% are aged 0 to 3. Okay? They probably know how to use it better than I do, which actually wouldn't be that hard, to be honest with you, but anyway. You know, it's really scary, isn't it? Or if you look at the actual growth in things like internet use, the fastest growing population are the 0 to 2-year-olds. The average age of access to computing, even in this country, is now something just over 2. So when we were, it was so interesting to hear Christina talking earlier and hear the debate about what age should children start formally learning. By the time they get to school, not that we always treat them that way, they know shed loads. They've got opinions. We have to look carefully at what we teach them, how we teach them. I don't think knowledge is the answer anymore. I think it really is true capability. So we have to rethink talent and skills and the qualities needed for this new and rather scary world, a world where, you know, quite genuinely, it's very hard to predict what will be needed. So what we have to do is draw on the inherent qualities and skills that we think will be essential. Now, we know some of them. They're pretty obvious. And I'll come on to that later. But in my view, we have to stop teaching facts. They have a limited place in education, I think. I mean, if I think about my own education, most of the things I was taught as truths are now gone. They've been superseded. We have a new truth. But the danger is that our technical capability is advancing every 2 years. It's doubling every 2 years. So that means that truth will keep changing as we discover new things, as we understand more. So we need to educate minds more than teach facts. Yes, some facts are still valid, but it's about educating the mind. The 21st century is very, very different. We need to educate people to be flexible with human skills and to have a deep sense of value. We are going to be trading all around the country. The growth economies, lots of them, don't really have any infrastructure. Ethical behaviours, a knowledge of morality, an insight into the inner self will be real skills with which to do business in those new economies. I would also like to see, and I've seen some of this, I've glimpsed it in our work, inspiration work. By the end of March, we'll have taken 7,000 young people through our work experience, work inspiration programme. And they're amazing. They're fascinating. And a little bit more about that again later. But what I see in them is they just need a bit more encouragement. We need to look at individual expression in a way that works for the whole child. You know, I don't see schools as a production line turning out a trained workforce. I see education as a place where a child is developed. And that has to be for a happy and productive life. And it just makes good business sense, because those are the happiest and most creative and most productive employees. And increasingly, as I said before, we need customers who also have those characteristics. Now, one of the interesting things is that we keep talking about the fact that skills are scarce, that talent is scarce, and that means that we've got to go out and explore different routes and unconventional sources of new talent so that we do genuinely get people who have those skills. Interestingly, we have no evidence whatsoever that the best people are necessarily those with first-class degrees or 2-1s, be they from top universities or whatever. I have no evidence that, say, exams reflect any situation in workplace or maybe actually even in life, particularly in the future. Because, you know, the future isn't about working on your own. It's not about pouring out your memory onto a piece of paper. It's about working with other people. It's about innovating and creating. It's about being able to deal with ambiguity, about being mentally resilient. These are the things that we need to help our children discover, help our young people build those things into their lives going forward. And what I've seen absolutely with the young people that we've had with us through Work Inspiration, they think so differently. Many of us think in a quite linear way. I think my educational background tried to get me to think rationally, to build slowly and in a linear way. But actually, these young people, they have these kind of hypertext minds. They're butterflies. They leap around. Their cognitive structures are not parallel. Sorry, they are parallel. They're not linear in this way. And we have to ask ourselves, how do we prepare them to go beyond just being readers and writers? How do we get them to be editors and collaborators too? You might be interested, again, one of those scary facts, to know that, if I can find it amongst these things, I got a bit carried away this morning when I was writing down some new facts, but something like, where is it? So 84% of children, for example, young people, play computer games about once a fortnight. 72% of teachers never play. I don't know whether that's just with computer games, but it was quite an interesting statistic. But there are 1.4 million UK pupils who have their own web page. 1.4 million have their own web page. They're creating their own content. If they were in a work environment, I'd be treating them as a content provider. And they're terrifying, absolutely terrifying for business, because these are the citizen marketeers. They can kill or promote your brand in a second, and they know they can. We have to teach them the morality of dealing with those kind of issues as well as everything else. So for me, there's a necessity for young people to learn with other people around the world. And what I would love you to be able to teach them or help them to teach themselves is to deal with massive amounts of information. It is coming at them every which way. They have to learn to pick out the bits that are relevant and learn to apply them. We're seeing people come out through the system who can understand relevance, but then applying it, not such a skill. We need both. I think sometimes that means we need more confidence in the system as well. Global communications, that's going to be really, really important, and we need to teach it as early as we possibly can. They need to be self-directed. They need to understand how to organise more and more of their own learning. It has to be an everyday experience, not along that linear line where you leave school and it's done with. We have to do it every day because our knowledge will change every day. It's really, really interesting as well because we all also need to understand the future nature of economics. Maybe the American dream is actually dead now and close to being buried, because for years the model to rise from poverty was through academia. Easy access to college led to mass skill attainment, which fueled the growing demand for well-paid skilled workers who are vital to business. But there's a dilemma, because it's business's duty to reduce the cost of any element critical to its success. So these roles are becoming relatively lower paid, they're leaving the Western world. Can education continue to lead to relative wealth? I saw a fabulous quote about this. It said, if the US can outsource tax to workers in India who earn $100 a week, don't let your kids grow up to be accountants. It's so true. The model is broken. We have to help produce the people who will create a new model. So I keep talking about these kind of skills, qualities and characteristics. And, you know, it's really, really interesting because everything we have seen in technology has been a bit of a warm-up act, really. We're in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to witness the main event. And that means that we are going to move to a position where technology will truly transform every aspect of business, of government, of education and society. It's a scary moment. Think about it. The great thing about technology, though, is we still have some control. And we can teach people how to work with it, learn through it, how to control it, so that maybe we might even end up with a world that's more connected. A world that really understands how it can work together, and that the most important thing is how we leave the planet and how we get on with each other. One further little snippet that you might find interesting. We've been doing a lot of demographic research, trying to understand where the new markets will come from after the current lot of emerging economies. Who's the emerging economies after that? And that demographic work has thrown out some quite interesting facts. Now, there are 67 countries in the world where the dominant age group is 15 to 29-year-old males. Interesting. 60 of those countries are at war. The other seven, and Libya was one of these countries, chose to pay large sums of money, relatively, $10,000 a year, to young people to avoid anarchy. those populations are in the emerging world. We also have to produce people who can deal with those issues. This is incredibly important. And we're going to see those changes moving through really, really quickly. In this new fast-paced world, we need people who, as I've said, are resilient, who can deal with uncertainty because the world will become ever more uncertain. Just look alone at anything else. Just look at the rates, the ups and downs of economics. Look at the increase of natural disasters. We are living in a more joined up but less certain world. We need to be able to work with different perspectives, different kinds of people. And the people you produce need to be able to ask challenging questions and to learn from each other. And they need to be able to ask those challenging questions of not just each other and their employers, but of government, of politicians, of economists, of society in general. Can you help us to produce that next generation of people who have that capability? I believe that's really, really what organisations want to see, particularly those like BT who are trying to do good by doing business. We can no longer see that you do business here and you make some profit and you put it into something philanthropic here. That's a flawed model. In the world we face, what we have to learn to do is to create business that is good for society. That means business that is environmentally sustainable, that can work with people from every aspect of our society and that can make profit in a way that is honourable and long-term. That's the future nature of the workforce that we need. And I'll leave you with a quote that I used previously. This is by Robert F. Kennedy. And what he said was, we will never find national purpose nor personal satisfaction in a mere continuation of economic progress, in endlessly amassing worldly goods. The gross national product measures neither our wit nor our courage, neither our wisdom nor our learning, neither our compassion nor our devotion to our country. It measures everything in short, except that which really makes life worthwhile. We all need you to produce the next generation of thinkers and doers who will save the planet, prevent war, and create a new set of measures for business and life. I don't think that's too much to ask. Thank you.